Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the one and only, the scariest 90 minutes on internet radio, Scaredcast. This is Dr. John Staney, just flying in live, but here in beautiful Myrtle Beach where it's 50 degrees and wonderful, and I would like to invite all of you to get down here right now. That notwithstanding, we're going to have a great show tonight. We've got everybody's here. We got two wonderful guests. I want to go down and greet our co-hosts. We got lots of them. The first one I want to introduce is Devin Tate, because he's got a brand new song out. How are you doing tonight, Devin?
Hey, Dr. John, I'm great. Good to be here with you all tonight.
It's good to have you here. Now, I have posted a link to your new song on the Scarycast Facebook page, and next week we are going to play it at the beginning of the show and at the end of the show. So it's going to be it's a magnificent song. It's called "Let the Yuletide Be Gay," and nobody else but Devin Tate could do this song. And it's so I invite everybody to go to the Scarycast Facebook page and check it out right now. So that's the first order of business. Second order of business is to introduce the queen of Scarycast, Robin McCray. How are you doing tonight, Robin?
I am doing great. Glad to be here and hear from everybody.
We're glad to have you here. From Emerald Isle, North Carolina, Papa Stro, the maestro of wrestling and actor and everything else, cool. How are you doing tonight, Papa Stro?
Great to be here with you guys. I'm excited about Devin's new song. It's cool. I'm sure it's going to be a lot better than the Island of Misfit Toys I listened to earlier. So, I mean, I'm really excited.
Okay. I can't wait to hear it. It's going to be awesome.
That's a good one. Yes, everybody listen to it. And then next week, Devin, we want you to talk a little bit about your song. I have a really great show lined up for next week. But we're going to let you begin it and end the show with your song. So we'll talk to you a little bit about producing it, your motivation for writing it, and all that cool stuff. So anyway, well, we're glad to have Papa Stro here. We're glad to have Robin here. We're glad to have, I've about gotten back into my place. So our next co-host, I'll pick somebody from Arkansas, namely Granny Hulkster. How are you doing tonight, Granny?
Well, I'm good. I can only be on about 45 minutes with you all because I got my podcast. So I have to do it at 9 o'clock, so my time. So,
well,
you know.
Well, we appreciate you being here with us, and thank you so much. The amazing
and we
one
had
from
snow,
Rabbit.
Yes, we had snow yesterday, Dr. John, in Arkansas.
Here we go.
And it was cold.
Oh, my God.
Hey, Velvet.
Snow.
And, yes,
and now,
no.
Hi, Granny.
The one and only
Granny,
the
no.
Amazing Velvet.
Yes.
I can't get away with that. I'm going to go home. I'm going to get back in my closet.
Hello, Velvet.
No, don't you dare leave. Well, we're glad you're here.
It was so cold, everybody. I made taco soup for supper tonight.
Oh, that's what I'm talking about. Oh, my God, that sounds so good.
It does.
That does sound good. Granny, send me the recipe. That sounds awesome. All right, and our last co-host to introduce, because he is going to introduce our guests tonight, the one, the only, from the mother capital of the universe, Harlan, Kentucky, here is Tony Filosi. How are you doing tonight, Tony?
I'm doing wonderful, Dr. John. How's everybody
hey, Tony.
Else doing?
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Tony.
Hey, what's up, everybody?
Hey.
Hey.
Where's Billy Puffs and Pans at, huh? Tony
That's
Bag
right.
of Donuts.
I'm
glad you're here, Tony.
Yes, I'm looking forward to the show tonight, and you're right, Dr. John, we have two wonderful guests tonight. Very interesting folks, if I must say so myself.
Well, you must. So go ahead.
He must.
We must. We must.
Will.
We shall. Who we have tonight here with us tonight from Harlan County, Kentucky, both of them, natives of Harlan County, Kentucky, is Miss Darla Sailor Jackson. And Miss Jennifer Fugit, Darla, if you could, tell us just a little bit about yourself.
Hi, I'm Darla Jackson. I'm a local business owner and author, and I own a funeral home in Harlan, Kentucky, and a retail shop. And I have a couple small businesses, and one of my projects are writing ghost books, books about true ghost stories, and then I also enjoy researching and writing about true crime.
And Darla is an exceptional author with many, many books, and she has a lot more credentials than that, but, you know, she is just a wonderful person. Now we will move on to Miss Jennifer Fugit. Hello, Jenny.
Hi.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, Jenny. Don't be bashful. Even though you're in the same place, the same house, and you're like all the way on the other end of the house.
I mainly do animal rescue from the Harlan County Animal Shelter, and that's my primary job. And
that's awesome. Yay.
Yeah. She goodies biscuit world. Yes. Get some.
Awesome. I've been doing that for about 15 years. And I like to do a lot of history research and dabble in the paranormal a little bit, investigating.
Now, Jenny's being very humble. Tell them how many animals through your career that you've helped to rescue, along with other people, not just, but through the program,
okay.
How many animals?
Roughly, we've averaged it to be, in the last, since 2005, around 10,000 animals we've been able to save from the shelter.
Wow.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yay.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah.
A woman after my own heart. I love that.
It's definitely a labor of love.
All right, Dr. John, back to you.
Back to me, huh? Well, I'll tell you what, Tony, since you are very familiar with these two ladies, I'm going to let you start the questioning. And panel, as you have a question or comment, be sure to join in because it's going to be a lot of fun. So, Tony, why was it important? I'll ask you a question, and you can ricochet that question onto our guests. Why was it important to have these two particular ladies on tonight's show? Because we arranged this about 3 weeks ago, and it was important then. So tell us all why it's important tonight.
It was very important to me, John, to get these two ladies on here tonight because of the story that they're going to tell. It's Jenny grew up here in Harlan County and had some experiences, and we do a lot of things with Darla now with research, and Darla's writing books, and we're hunting some. And these are two really talented ladies, and we were doing interviews for a book, and Darla, whenever she heard the interview of Jenny's story, she automatically says, "Wow, this is something I have to write. I have to do a standalone on this." And she done a fantastic job in catching the essence of Jenny's experiences. And I after I read the book and I interviewed Jenny, and I've heard the story several times, and each time I heard the story, I thought, man, this is great. This is great. This has to be told. And then and whenever Darla put it together, it was in my opinion, it was phenomenal. But Darla, what makes the story, what grabbed you about that story? What made you say, I have to write this?
Well, just as a setup of what was going on, Tony and I are collaborating, and we are writing a book currently about true ghost stories of Harlan County, which is my expertise. I've written Harlan County Haunts and more Harlan County Haunts, and I hadn't written a book in years, and I felt that it was time. So Tony does interviews, and then I put it to pen. I had heard that Jenny had some stories, but I had no idea what they were about, or I knew that one of them had something to do possibly with Bigfoot. But other than that, I knew nothing. And so I've already listened to several interviews from other people, and I've written them down, and then I get to Jenny, and honestly, it's magic. They're scary. Her stories are scary, but they're magical, and they all seem to just fit together, and it just all seemed to make this wonderful, fanciful story that I had it in my head, and so I decided to just put the current project on hold, and I just started writing this book, The Secret Chronicles of Pine Mountain, and I didn't stop until I was finished, and then I resumed the project again, the first project, but I had to write that story because it's magical, in my opinion.
Well, this is Dr. John. I want to jump in. I have got to hear a little bit of magic now from Jenny. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's
absolutely
fine.
Absolutely.
All right, Jenny, weave a spell on us. Give us some magic, okay? Tell us this story.
Well, the awesome thing about the book was how she kind of captured the essence of the story and of my childhood. You know, we had a small group of friends that were super close, and we were like family. We spent all our weekends together. We, you know, in our imagination, we were architects or archaeologists, and we were constantly outside playing and, you know, digging up things and collecting rocks and stuff. And, you know, we had some really scary experiences as kids as a group, and you know, it led me on the path to research the paranormal further in my life. But looking back, you know, the magic that happens in this area, you know, a lot of kids don't do that anymore. They don't go out, they don't, you know, have adventures and play in the mountains and things of that nature. And so the biggest thing I wanted to thank Darla for was actually capturing it in a classic Hardy Boy or Nancy Drew book, and, you know, making it to where maybe if a kid picks this up, we'll be able to lend a little bit of the magic to them. Like Darla brought out, the stories are a lot scarier than what's in the book. You know, they're diluted a little bit so that younger readers can enjoy them without being terrified. But we had some really, really terrifying experiences at this friend's home, and it was over the course of a couple years, and we you know, we lived in our imagination, but at the same time we had these experiences happen that just basically scared the pants off of us. And you know, this is kind of in the book, but there was a situation, I don't know if you guys are familiar with the glow-in-the-dark stars that you can put all over your bedroom walls as kids and on your ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh yeah,
we actually went to the library a little bit and studied constellations and took the time to actually put these all over the certain friend's bedroom wall. And we would, it took us a week or so to get all these little stars up. And one night I woke up, and we were probably about 12 or 13 at this point. I wake up, and I remember this friend had a brass metal bed. So if anybody had one of those growing up, like those day beds, if you so much as breathe funny, the bed would kind of rattle and shake. And I look over, and my friend is awake, but she's frozen in fear. And I kind of look to where she's looking, and there is a shadow that's in this little enclave where the door to her bedroom is. And it passes in front of us at the foot of the bed and moves along the wall. And it's a shadow enough to where it would dull the stars. And it moved across her bedroom until it just it disappeared into the wall. And I think eventually we were so scared we didn't breathe, we didn't talk, we didn't move or anything. I believe we finally just drifted back out to sleep. But the little investigators that we are, the next day we're trying to debunk how this could have happened. And so there were so many things that happened in that house. We really, you know, got confused. At the same time, we researched some things a little bit. Just back then, we didn't have the internet in this area, you know, at that age. So we read some stories, and we were lucky enough that each of our schools had little tucked away sections on the paranormal and stuff. But, yeah, it was really interesting. Stuff happened there when we were growing up.
Jenny, tell them about one of the things that I loved writing about was the Native American influence, because there's such a rich Cherokee history. And really one of the things that inspired me the most was finding the Cherokee mounds and what you found there. So tell a little bit about that.
Yeah, we grew up in, you know, this area, and you know, the old timers always told us, you know, when you're poking about the woods, you know, there were certain rules that they would tell us. And, you know, if you ever hear a woman scream, you make sure you run like the Dickens out of the mountains, because it's probably a mountain lion and things of that nature. So they would always tell us, if you find a mound of rocks in the middle of the woods, don't disturb it. And, you know, you'll randomly find, you know, things in the mountain that may be a mound. But, there was this one section of woods that we would go and hike, and we found a mound. And I like to say that curiosity got the best of two little ignorant people. But we actually we disturbed it. And we were flicking rocks around, and we found a small leather pouch. And, you know, curiosity got the best of us. And now looking back, I'm like, what were you thinking? But we were, I reached down and actually picked it up, and it disintegrated in my hand. And I just remember the feeling of it just crumbling. I'm assuming because of the humidity and everything scientific about it. But as it disintegrated, there were a small amount of beads that fell on the ground. And when we went to pick them up, they just basically fell apart. And
what
I remember
color were they in?
I remember distinctly the red and the blue. And it was devastation for us, because we had, you know, piddled around in the creeks and the mountains for so long. We had really thought that we had found our Indiana Jones moment, you know. And I tell people when I do open up about my story a little bit, that that's probably when everything went to hell in a sense, because after that's when all the craziness started. And it was just, you know, a very magical moment for us still to this day, because we were able to find something. We weren't able to document it, but it was, you know, our little moment in time.
And I'd like to add that during this time, if I'm not mistaken, actually the scariest part of the book, and something that I wrote as true in the other book that I'm writing, I toned it down for younger readers a bit, but one of the most terrifying incidences was in those woods when Jenny and her friends were actually chased by what she refers to as a Bigfoot creature. It was a large, hairy creature, and I think it had jagged teeth from what I recall. And to me, that seemed to be, one of the scariest parts of her story.
Yeah, and it was really super terrifying.
Didn't it chase you out of the woods, Jenny? You guys out of the woods?
Yes. And, you know,
what happened?
If you can imagine this troop of, you know, four girls, younger girls, you know, hiking up the mountain and just having a beautiful day. And you know, we get so far up the mountain. And I remember looking over to my friend's sister, and she was older than us at the time. And she was frozen in fear. And she kind of gaped her mouth open and was looking in a direct to the right, to the direction of another tree. And we all kind of looked over there, and there was something extremely large standing there. And I don't think our little minds could really quickly think of what is going on here. There was just that frozen panic. And this thing turned and looked at us. And that's, I think, when we all realized we were in really bad trouble. And it kind of opened its mouth. And I think I've described a little bit as it was a round mouth with jagged teeth. And it just opened its mouth. There was no noise. You know, it felt like the wind had stopped on top of the mountain. And it turned and looked at us. And at that point, as a collective, we all decided to run off that mountain. And I will never forget the sound of us all just off trail, if you can imagine, hitting every bush and limb and getting scratched, and we could hear it behind us. And I don't think we stopped until we ran off the mountain into her back porch and into the kitchen where we were all crying. And everybody, you know, all four of us stopped. And it took us a while to calm down after that. And the crazy thing about that is me and Tony were at an event a couple years ago, and that friend's daughter came up to me, and she's little. She was like 4 or 5 years old at the time. And we got to talking because we don't really get to see each other out very much. And her little girl looks up at me, and she's adorable, and she says, "You're the little girl that my mommy saw Bigfoot with." And I was just like, whoa, she remembers this, and she told her daughter about it. So it was a little bit of validation. So we actually went back and, you know, left the event and went in the privacy of a room, and we kind of talked with her parents about some things that had happened at the home, and it was really nice to reminisce and know that I wasn't alone in remembering all this craziness.
One thing that I loved about it, too, is I'm bringing up the different high points, I guess, of her stories is I don't know if our hosts have heard of the very popular documentary in this area, which is Hellier. And it is it's a very good documentary about the Pine Mountain Range. And their investigation actually took place in the Pike County, Letcher County area of the Pine Mountain Range. Jenny's stories actually happen, I'm guessing more southwest of Hellier, Kentucky, but still the same range and not very far away. And what really, I think, grabbed me is because I've watched Hellier twice now, and I'm very interested in it because I see so many correlations, Hellier Harlan correlation. And Jenny actually sees a goblin at the foot of Pine Mountain. And I love this story because it is not a 3-second glance or seeing something running. This goblin stared them down till they were the ones that finally walked away because it wasn't going anywhere. And that was probably when I just realized this story is, it's magic. It stands alone. This is a book. And so I felt like the goblin is really relevant right now because of Hellier and the way that she was describing this creature. It's not exact, but it's very, very similar to what the people of Hellier, how they describe that goblin, and also how the Hopkinsville goblin, the Kelly, Kentucky goblins are depicted. And if you've seen the documentary, it's theorized that perhaps the goblins are traveling the Mammoth Cave, the Mammoth Cave system, and that system goes right under Pine Mountain. So, so that is another really neat aspect.
Darla, I wanted to interject something. We had Shane Hollis on here about 6 months ago. Tony may not have been on that particular show, but he talked to us a little bit about what happened at Hellier and the incidences at Hopkinsville. In fact, I was, until they decided to not have the event, I was supposed to go up there to the Kelly Little Green Men festival and talk about Lizard Man, of all things. But I hate that they didn't get to have it. And I had mentioned that we'd like to, probably like to have a Scary Cast reunion up there in that area, because it would really be a lot of fun. We could get some of our newer friends like Shane. And now, if we can do this next year, we would of course love to have the two of you. If we can engineer a little bit of a homecoming for the Scary Cast crowd up there, I think it would be a blast. I'd like to ask Robin. Robin, now, when it comes to Bigfoot chasing anybody, I'm going to start the sentence, and then I'm going to let you finish with your comments.
I couldn't hear you. It blacked out. wanted to ask me
I'm going to state something, and I'm going to let you finish it. I know how you'll finish it. But if that was a Bigfoot, and had Bigfoot wanted to catch those girls, he would have caught them, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. They don't,
so
number one.
He was just scaring them
it's
out.
It's scary because people look at them and they look at what they look like, and that causes the panic. But what they do is there's actually different methods they have, some of which they could have done that day. I don't know. They will project fear on you so that you're afraid. That doesn't mean they're actually going to do anything by it. They do that to get you out of the area. You could have walked into an area they were hunting in, their families were in, their children were in, or they just were uncomfortable having you that close to them. Because when you, the ones up in the mountains behave a little bit different than the ones off the mountain. They go up there to get away from people. They don't want to be around people. They don't necessarily want to hurt anybody. They just don't want to be around them. A lot of your clans, the laws of the clan state, you have no contact with hairless humans, and that's why they go up there. So if you're up there and you happen to accidentally wander in, it's very feasible that they're going to put that fear on you to get you scared, so you'll do exactly what you did. You went back down the mountain. Now, if they actually want to hurt you, there is no place on this planet you can go to get away from them, literally. If they want to throw something at you and they miss you, that's because they're giving you a warning and a courtesy and saying, hey, now you're getting too close. If they want to hit you, they don't miss. And if they want to catch you, there's no way to avoid it. So you must have walked in onto something. Some of them are just crabby. I mean, they're people. The genetic state, they're a human hybrid. So if they're crabby, if they don't want to be around you, I mean, they will. They'll scare you to get you out of there.
Exactly. Now, Devin, you had an experience with a shadow person. Did you was it completely opaque? Meaning, was it such that you couldn't see through it, or was there any translucence when you had your experience? Because it sounds like these young girls, when they were in the room, they could. It sounded like there was a little bit of translucence involved. Do you remember? Because and just remind us where that happened to you. It was somewhere in Hollywood or in the Hollywood Hills, right?
Sure. Yeah, it was in the Hollywood Hills. Actually, I think it's technically West Hollywood by the Chateau Marmont, which is a famous hotel.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember him being transparent. I remember him being opaque, but I also didn't, I purposely didn't look too much at him. But I got the impression he was opaque. Yeah.
I kind of want to make a comment on that.
Yeah.
Okay. Shadow Man, Shadow men are very dangerous. This is not anything to play around with. They can be neutral, which is what they're supposed to be, but that doesn't always work that way. And they are dangerous. They are not anything to mess with. Devin, you did exactly right. Don't try to make an eye contact with this thing. And for the love of God, don't let it get its hands on you. Like, I can tell you from personal experience how deadly these things are. They can do everything from messing up your day to killing you.
And I think
they typically get away. Yeah, they typically are supposed to be not good or bad. But the problem is, like with anything that's neutral, it can go either way. I've not seen any that are good. I've seen some that will walk away. And I've been on the receiving end. And I buried a son because of it. So when I tell you, honestly, from my heart, be careful, I'm sincerely meaning it.
Wow. Okay. All right. Well, let's hear some more from the ladies from Harlan County. This is very interesting. I'm picking on some of our co-hosts that I know have a little experience in this. I am now. I want to ask you something, and this co-host will know he is up next. But did you ever hear any voices or any sounds when you were out exploring, like spirits talking or whatever, Jenny? Did you ever have that experience?
No, it was mainly feelings. And
they project
that. Yeah, and I'm able to pick up on feelings easily in certain situations. So I'm assuming that it was, you know, times 10 when we were in these situations. But the interesting thing about that was that the other girls that were with me were picking up on that as well. So,
yeah, it can be terrifying.
It's like, you know, take your breath away. I have a hard time still talking about it because it pulls up all that terrifying feelings all over again, even though it happened so long ago in my life.
There's a lot of people that will get PTSD from it, honestly.
I can see that.
People call me about it, whether it's the dog man or the Bigfoot or any of the cryptids, that they will. It's because when they project that feeling, I mean, they hit you higher court with it.
Exactly.
It'll get you right to your
bones. Her family had experiences without me there. There was a situation one time that supposedly, and this is just, you know, a secondhand story, that it was the older sister and the mom was home alone in the house. And they had a box sitting on the floor. It was back when everybody still had cord phones connected to the wall. And the reason why I said that is because it was in a specific place in the house. And they swear up and down that they were hearing, "Help me," from a box. And
oh, wow.
It terrified them so bad that they took the box outside and burned it in the barbecue pit. And, I mean, there was some really hanky stuff that happened at that house because, you know, looking back, it wasn't just myself and this friend. It was the entire family that was experiencing things. And for a grown adult woman, you know, to tell us this as children, you know, was even scarier because it kind of did, you know, because, like, kids are, you know, imaginative and, you know, everything. But when a grown-up's sitting there telling you that they've had their own personal experience, you're like, oh, wow, you know. And they had some really, really crazy things happen in that home.
Well, right now, since you did mention that some people heard voices coming out of a box, I would like to turn the floor over to Papa Stro. And Papa Stro, I've had you tell this story several times, but it is a magical, mystical, and scary story every time you do it. And would you mind sharing with everybody one more time my favorite story about filming the Hollow Oak at 3 a.m. in the morning? And I think you know what I'm driving at, right?
Well, I thought at first you were going to reference to a Jack-in-the-Box joke where I come out of the box and, like, surprise everybody with whatever, but.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was like, okay, what's the punchline, right? Okay. Yeah. All right, well, this occurred during filming of a film I was involved with, not only acting in, but behind the scenes with a film called The Hollow Oak. And it was one of the scenes was in the forest scene, which in the story, this took back in the latter century, where these witch hunters were giving the hang a witch for supposed, you know, crimes against the town, right? And they had all the townspeople there in the scene, and I was one of the judge witch hunters in the scene. And as we're saying our lines, right, the sound lady, who was handling the sound, the boom and everything, she stops and says, "Guys, you've got to hear this, right?" She's like really freaked out. And so we did the playback, and as we were saying our lines, there were faint voices repeating the lines we were saying, right? So we're like, and this, keep in mind, this was like the witching hour, 3 o'clock at night, you know, and we're looking around to see if there was anybody in the forest, and, you know, we couldn't find anybody. And I happened to walk down a path from where we're shooting the scene, and there I spot this graveyard, right? This little graveyard with unmarked epitaphs. Not far from where we're shooting the scene, and we're all looking at each other like, oh gosh, we got some big supernatural fans watching this film. So it was really interesting.
Yeah, I think that's a great story. I know that when I had Kevin, who was the maybe he still is the head of the of Spade, one of the Kentucky Ghosts. In fact, Tony, I need to get Kevin hooked up with you. There's an organization called Spade. It's some Kentucky ghost hunters, and he and I were out in and talking about hearing things. He and I were out at All Saints Church Cemetery. That's where Alice, the memorial to Alice Flagg is. And he didn't tell me, but he had a recorder going on while we were out there. So we came back to my house, and he had all of his electronics set up in my office. He had the thing completely covered with everything. And what he would do sometimes is he would slow things down or speed them up to see if he heard anything that was very recognizable. And it turns out that there was a little girl's voice trying to talk to us when he slowed it down, and she kept saying, "Come into the building and speak to me." The building meaning there was an old, old chapel for that church, for All Saints Episcopal Church, that had been built right next to what was the graveyard. Now they've built the very, very nice large church across the street. But she was definitely saying, "Come in, speak to me." And that was scary as all get out. And you talk about hearing things. I need to track him back down. He's a good guy, and I'm sure he's still got that. That was one of the most frightening things I ever heard. So you know, a lot of people have had experiences, and I got to ask Granny Hulkston. Now, Granny, you've had some ghostly occurrences and experiences, because I know you're gonna be heading out here in just a minute. But you have had some, haven't you?
Well, I've had a few. I've had a few. One of them was my parents. I moved to Arkansas in 1988, and we were living at a place called Holiday Island, which was about 10 miles north of Eureka Springs, Arkansas. Eureka Springs is like a little tourist place, you know, and they used to called it the little Switzerland of the Ozarks because of all the shops downtown and the old Victorian type houses. Well, my mom and dad, they had a double wide, and they lived like on the backside of Holiday Island, and the only time that this ever happened was when my dad's youngest sister would come and visit.
Now, we've got a little bit of Indian blood through our ancestors. I mean, not much, but, you know, Blackfoot tribe, maybe a little bit of Cherokee, but very little, you know, and I don't even remember how much. But my mom and dad had a ceiling fan in their living room. And the only time that this would ever happen was when my dad Junka's sister, Lois, would come visit us. We were sitting there one day playing cards, and all of a sudden the chain on the ceiling fan started swinging back and forth. And it got to the point where it was swinging back and forth so quickly that it would start hitting the chains, you know, on the light shades. I mean, we could have other friends, other family members come. It would never do it. Only when my dad's younger sister was in the house. So my mom and dad, they eventually moved to Springdale. And my daddy passed away in 2004. And we were sitting in the apartment where my mom and dad lived in. And I was looking at that ceiling fan one day in their living room there in their apartment. My mom says, "What are you looking at?" And I said, "I'm waiting for that chain to start swinging back and forth," you know, because they said that my mom and dad's lot where they had their double wide was at one time they believed was a part of an Indian burial ground. Now, I don't know if that was true or not, but that's what we had heard. But after my dad died, my mom woke up one night and she always, you know, kept the bathroom light on. And she walked into the bathroom and she still had my daddy's electric razor. Well, the cap cover was laying in the sink, in the bathroom sink. Well, she heard a noise, and she walked out into the hallway, and she looked into the living room, and my daddy's recliner chair was rocking. Well, when my mom told me this, I said, "Well, Daddy just wanted to get up and go shave." You know? I mean, I don't know. I couldn't explain it. But we could never explain the chain swinging and the double wide when they lived at Holiday Island. We never could figure out why it would only happen when my aunt was there.
Wow. You think maybe she had an attachment?
I don't know. You know, I mean, like I said, because, I mean, we had a little bit of, now, I know her and her roommate, they used to live in an old farmhouse somewhere up in Missouri, and I don't remember where it was at, where her and her roommate lived at. But radios would come on in the middle of the night. Now, that was near an old, like, Civil War area, you know, like a in Pea Ridge, Arkansas, they have the Pea Ridge part where they do the reincarnations, well, except when COVID was going, you know, of the reincarnations of the battle, you know, the battles, the, you know, like the Civil War battles and stuff like that. And then Prairie Grove has a park, too, where they do that, I think, from time to time. But I don't remember what part of Missouri they were living in. But they would hear radios would come on in their house in the middle of the night. I mean, just come on and start playing. I mean, and, you know, nobody would be in the house except them. But radios would come on, and, I mean, just really weird, different weird things. I mean, now I'm sure, I don't know, I'm sure you all, Darla, I don't know if you all, you know, Eureka Springs, they have a hotel called the Crescent Hotel. Now, I don't know if you all are familiar with that, but that is said to be haunted. I don't know if it is
heard,
or not.
I've definitely heard of the Crescent Hotel. And one of my favorite shows back in the 2000s was Ghost Hunters. And I think they went to that hotel maybe, or maybe somewhere in Hot Springs, Arkansas, but I started researching the hotels in that area after that, and yes, I have heard of the Crescent Hotel for sure.
Well, there was a situation that I experienced one day. I was there with a friend of mine, and we were walking around in the lobby, and they had these beautiful lights that hung out in the lobby, and I was looking in the gift shop window one day, and I saw a reflection of, like, one of the lights that I saw in the lobby, and the reflection was moving back and forth. but the lights out in the lobby were just as still as could be. And I went back 3 weeks later, and that reflection of that light was gone. I mean, it wasn't there. And I'm, like, looking in the window, and I'm, like, turning my head upside down, like, okay, where'd that reflection go? Where'd that light go? I know I saw that light. And one of the ladies that worked there, you know, she asked me, and I told her what I had seen. Now, they actually had a cat that lived there for about 20-plus years. His name was Morris. He looked like the Nine Lives cat that you would see on the Nine Lives commercial. He looked just like Morris. He was an orange tabby. And that cat got so much publicity. I mean, he was more popular than people. And when he died, they actually put a big story about Morris on the front page of the Eureka Springs newspaper. That cat was buried in a velvet-lined casket and buried in the garden where he loved to go sun himself. I mean, you can stand up on the outside balcony and look down to the garden and see Morris's tombstone. That cat was, I mean, people would come from all over just to see that cat. And one time I was doing a substitute teaching job and at the high school there, and I had to show a video called Tales and Legends of the Ozarks, and there's a spoof about the Crescent in that video. I mean, the guy would work there, you know, and it was the off-season. One night he was sitting in the lobby by the fireplace, and Morris started jumping at things. The guy couldn't see anything, but this cat was jumping at things like he could see something. And there was a couple that had checked in. It was like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and they were in bed, and they saw like a shadow walk by the foot of their bed. Their bathroom door came open, the door shut, and the bathroom light came on. Well, when they got up and opened the bathroom door, there was nothing in the bathroom, of course. Well, they checked out. They said, hey, we'll sign whatever we have to sign. This is what we saw. And I know a lot of people that work there. I had a friend who had a heating and air conditioning business, and he would go up during the off season, and he said the phone would ring at the switchboard, and they'd go down and find the receiver off the phone somewhere, you know, downstairs, you know, somewhere in the hotel. The receiver of the telephone would be off the hook. Now, I know that hotel at one time was a dormitory for a girls' school. It was a hospital for cancer patients. They say that there were people actually buried in the walls of that. I mean, when they had the morgue open. I know for a while they had the morgue closed down for a while, but when they started doing ghost tours again, I think they opened the morgue back up. But they say, and I mean, there were at one time the walls, some of the walls near the morgue were painted purple because this doctor was like a crazy, crazy doctor. I mean, they said that they believed he killed some of his patients, you know, because that he was doing experiments on and bury him in the walls. But I don't know how true that is.
Well, that's pretty creepy, Glenn.
But
those are
just some of the things that I've experienced. But it, ladies, it was wonderful getting to listen to you. I wish I could stay on longer, but I have to jump off here because I'm part of another podcast that I help with on Monday nights. But I would love to be able to stay on the whole time for the show and listen to your all stories.
Well,
you all were absolutely amazing.
Thank you so much.
You can take a listen. All right.
Oh, I will.
Now,
so, everybody have a great week.
Right,
you have a good
Grant.
Night.
Thanks.
And
bye-bye.
Last but absolutely not least, the man that lives in one of the creepiest, scariest neighborhoods I've ever been in Ravenel, South Carolina, the one and only Amazing Velvet. Have you ever had anything go on back there that is the least bit creepy?
Yeah. Really?
Oh, yeah, because we did, because when the northern soldiers burnt most of Savannah down and they were coming to Charleston, they had to come through this area in the Civil War. So we've heard some creepy things here and there out here. I had a guy come over and we sat on the back deck, and he did a couple EVPs, and he talked to some colonel in the Northern Army, and he kept saying, "We're coming, we're marching, we're coming through," and he said it about four or five times. That was a little creepy, but the biggest thing out here is seeing the shadows late in the evening, right about dusk, because I got a lady next to me, and then the people that live behind me are, well back in there. I can't see their property at all, and it's a good trek to get back there. But you see stuff, every now and again. You go, wait a minute, did I see that? Was that real? And then you realize, yeah, it was real. But I know the biggest one was anytime I smell cigarettes, it's my wife's grandmother, because she smoked. That's what killed her. She smoked and smoked. So anytime she pays us a visit, nobody here smokes at the house. And we were sitting earlier tonight talking about it, actually. My wife smelled it yesterday when nobody told me she got here. And she walked in the house and she goes, "Man, who's smoking that cigarette?" And she realized, oh, I'm the only one here. I know who it is. We have that often. That's
awesome.
A weekly thing here. That's a weekly thing here, man. But the creepiest one, though, was not at this house. And I told Dr. John this story before. When the twins, my twin boys are 24, when they were like 8 and my daughter was the baby, I'd gone to wrestle. And the neighbor across the street, Hank, he was a drunk, and he had a boot on his foot, and he had a walker or a cane. And we'd hear it clacking, him clacking down the road when he'd go to the corner store and come back. Well, he passed away like 2 weeks before I went to this show. And we go to the show and come back, and it's a little horseshoe road, so there was only 10 houses on the street at the time. And it's off the beaten path as well. So we come around the corner. I'm waking everybody up. All right, we're almost home. We turn the corner. We're 6 houses down. So everybody's getting up, and here come and I look up after talking to them and turn the corner, and my wife grabbed me. Hank was walking right down the middle of the road, so I swerved and missed him, went around Hank, and pulled into the driveway. And as we got out, we looked. There's nobody there. And then we realized, oh, crap. Hank died a couple weeks ago, but he was right there.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Oh, yeah. That was the one that got me.
That's so creepy. I'm going to turn it back over to the creepy guy from Harlan, Kentucky, who will then ask our two guests some more questions, because this is fun. It's great when all of our co-hosts seem to have paranormal stories. I guess that's why we meet every Monday night on ScaryCast. So, Tony, back to you, buddy, to ask our guests some more wonderful questions.
Now, Darla, in the book, Gina tells a story about seeing the goblin. You mentioned the goblin a minute ago. Could you guys talk about what the goblin looked like and give us kind of a description of him?
Yeah. First, I just want to say, because Darla brought up Hellier, I am so glad that I told somebody and a handful of people these stories before Hellier came out, or you all would think I'm insane. Because
no.
Me and Tony had actually sat down, and I had told him some of my experiences before Hellier actually came out, and that's what kind of got us into researching a little bit more about Pine Mountain and the anomalies that happened there. There was one night we were laying in bed, and we woke up to the sounds of kind of a high-pitched, I don't want to call it a scream, but it was a yell. And it was coming from her sister's room. And so, of course, being kids, we just fly in there. And I remember the sounds of the doors and everything. So we go up, and her sister's staring out the window. And I don't know if anyone remembers, but back in the day, there were these certain kind of curtains called blinds that were really popular. So people had blinds over the window. They didn't really have curtains. And so you could see the silhouette of her sister staring at the window, out the window, from the moonlight and the streetlight. And she's standing there making this blood-curdling yell. And we run up to the window because she's just staring out. And I remember looking out, and there was her driveway. And then, you know, out from the driveway is a road that goes, you know, against the property that goes to other houses. And in this small field in front of her home, there is a creature in the field. And I tried to remember some landmarks so that I can kind of remember how tall this thing was. From my recollection, I'm assuming 2 to 3 feet tall. And this little grayish-green creature is staring at us. And it's just looking at us. And because of the moon and the streetlight, we can see it. And it sees us.
Did you see the face of it?
Yes. And the thing that I remember very clearly was the nose. The nose kind of reminded you of a pig. And it didn't seem to have any clothes on, but there were like strips of what I would call brownish cloth. And it was misshapen. So there wasn't like, it wasn't really round, but it wasn't really skinny. It was kind of, you know.
Did you see whether or not there were like spiky things that went all the way down its back? Or at least like on the back of it, like a porcupine?
We didn't see the back. And so the scary thing about this was, is we're standing there, all three of us, looking out the window. We're staring at this thing, and it's staring back, and it's not doing anything.
Did you see any ears on it at all?
Yes, and the ears were pointed. And so
I'm sorry, what?
They were pointed. They were pointed long.
It sounds like a puckwudgie.
Yeah, that's what somebody
did. Anybody
was
get hurt because they're dangerous? They'll kill you. Are you guys? I mean, did anybody get hurt at all?
No. We didn't go outside. This was through the bedroom window. And what made me think more along the lines of maybe a goblin or something like that was that, you know, it was kind of had a brown belly. And, you know, I think we eventually just left the bedroom completely. And for some reason, it didn't wake up her mother and father. And if I remember correctly, her sister actually slept with us that night. And we actually, this experience, it brought back the fear of just reliving it. It was really extremely tough to get through it because it dredged up all those feelings.
Oh, yeah.
But we never talked about it again. We didn't discuss it the next day. We didn't try to do anything. It was so scary that we let that one lie. Because we were kind of like little investigators. We were trying to figure out what the heck was going on our own. It's not really something you can talk to your parents or adults about, you know. And so, but that situation right there, we never talked about it again. And because the scariest thing about it was when we stared back, or we stared out into the darkness, it stared back. And it didn't show no fear. It didn't run away. It didn't scurry. It didn't, nothing. It knew we were there, and it was looking right back at us.
Grab your Bibles. Hang on to them tonight, I'll tell you. That's some scary stuff. Well, ladies, I would like to take this opportunity to go around the room, the virtual room that we have with all of our co-hosts, and let them have a chance to ask you a question about some of your experiences, or whatever they'd like to ask you, Tony.
I'm going to start with Tony. Then I'm going to go to at least the first three are going to be Tony, Papa Stroh, and then Robin. And then we'll hit Devin and Velvet. So, Tony, what question do you have? Because you know these ladies, and you're familiar with their stuff.
Kenny, whenever that you guys looked out the window and saw the goblin, it's a two-part question. When you looked out and saw the goblin, what did you think? What did you guys talk amongst yourselves? And then the second part of the question is, Darla, when you heard that story, what did you think about?
No, we didn't talk about it ever again. We really didn't say anything again. It was another terrifying situation to the point where nobody called. Nobody called.
What was going on?
Yeah, nobody
called. Frozen in fear.
Yeah, it seems to be a recurring thing, but we were kids, you know. I guess I assume that we were just trying to process what was happening in front of us. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, we did not discuss it. While it's happening,
Darla,
or afterwards.
What are your thoughts on that, Darla?
My first thought was goblin, because of the description and the location, which was the foot of Pine Mountain. My one of the first reactions was, okay, now we've got a story. We've actually got a young reader's book here, because everyone loves the goblin. In the book, the goblin's character is more of not mischievous, but he's got a bad disposition. He's whiny. He's fussy. He wants to fuss about things. So I grabbed onto that character as being just this little almost comic relief, which in reality, whatever that was terrifying. And in the adult book that you and I are writing, I give this thing credit for being as scary as it really is. In the book, which I want to be appropriate for everyone, I made him just a little bit more funny, not quite as terrifying. I thought of Hellier. I thought of Lord of the Rings. I thought of all of these little, even Harry Potter. That kind of character is what I thought when I heard of this.
Grumpy.
Perfect.
Grumpy.
He's grumpy. I made him grumpy in the book.
Okay.
All right.
Grumpy. Well, thank you for those answers. Those are very interesting. Papa Stroh, what question would you like to pose to our guests?
Well, do my impersonation of the professor in Rodney Dangerfield's Back to School film. I have one question, but in two parts. Okay. One... First one is kind of like a random thing. I mean, do you guys still have like Tudor's Biscuit World over where you guys are at the restaurant?
No, I don't think so.
Did you say Biscuit World?
Yeah.
Yes, there is one in Grayson, Kentucky, which is
North
Harlan. Yes.
I've been there. And my God, I thought their bologna biscuits was haunted when I first tried it. I mean, because it was like speaking
no,
to
they're
me.
They're killer. No, Biscuit World is
only you, buddy.
Tremendous, right? Okay,
yeah.
Well, that's
really
cool.
Yeah.
Because I remember when I was watching my buddy there who lives in Ashland, right? We're watching TV,
yep.
Right? And there was this old man outside of the Biscuit World place, and he was talking about how great the bologna biscuits were in Tudor's Biscuit World.
There you go. Absolutely.
Oh, man. A lot of great memories.
Second
part, yeah. Oh, yeah. They were magical. The second part was these creatures that you talked about, you witnessed. Why do you think they were there? What purpose do you think they were there to hang around for? Do you have an hypothesis or opinion on that?
And I have an answer for this one too, Jenny.
Yep. Yeah. Because, like, we're kind of researching the same thing the Cliff Note version is that large body of underground water, a lot of magnetic anomalies, and a lot of cave systems that tie into the Mammoth cave systems. And that's just the adult assumption that we've kind of came up with.
Okay. Yeah, that's really interesting.
My answer to that is basically Pine Mountain is magic. And there's a lot about this mountain range that we know nothing about. It's unexplored. What happened was young children actually went up in these mountains. Children are very open to things. I think that there were all these things just waiting to be discovered. And Jenny and her friends actually got that opportunity. I don't think that happens. I don't think that happens, unfortunately. I don't think that happens a lot anymore due to technology and our lifestyle. But but for that brief moment in time, that year or two, Jenny and her friends got to experience the magic that is Pine Mountain.
Exactly. We call them the magical Misty Mountains. That was one of my favorite childhood sayings for that area, was the magical, mystical mountains. So,
yeah,
a magical, misty mountain. Wow. And it was pure magic. And looking back, even though everything was so scary, I wouldn't change anything, because this just experiences alone was magic, in essence.
So it had like a, even though it was like out of the ordinary, it had kind of like a peaceful demeanor about it, right? Like
well,
a
magical. Not so much
peace.
When it was happening, but like when you take, you know, the experiences as a whole, it's magic. You know, you've got, you know, the adventure, the beginning, ending, and everything in between. So if you just pull out the scary things, it's going to be scary. But when you put it as a collective, it was magic in an essence.
Okay. That's
good.
Amazing. It really is.
it is. And I will say this. There's another magical place, and that is called Mount Shasta in California. I'm still trying after 2 years to get Brett Luter to come on the show. And if I do, I will send out rockets ablazing if we can get Brett Luter, who's the king of Mount Shasta, to tell us what all goes on up there. I mean, I know I've heard a lot of stories, but Brett seems to know the answers. But he's hard to get a hold of. Sometimes I can talk to him on Messenger, sometimes not. But I keep trying, and we want to get him on here. Well, thank you, Papa Stroh. The Queen of Scary Cast, Robin, what question do you have for these two young ladies?
Well, first of all, what age were you when all this happened?
I was probably around, it was in, you know, because this wasn't like boom, 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 you know, happening one after another. This was spread out between 3 years. So I was between 12 and 14 years old when all of these things.
Okay, because, I wondered, because it's really common for somebody that experiences a lot of what you guys did. It seems to go on throughout the course of their life. It starts young and it just continues. And I think, you know, some people are just more not susceptible to it, but, you know, because they are more of an open mind.
In 10,
and it, you know, like you said too, you know, the kids are innocent, their minds are open, they're not closed, they're not have preconceived notions of things. So a lot of people that experience this as adults, they do it as children. And that's why I asked you, you know, how old you were when it happened. Did you have things that, minor things here and there that you noticed had started happening even when you were younger?
Yeah. And there's more stories that have yet to be put on 10.
you know, I've had things happen to me since I was very small. So,
yeah,
you know, she just focused in
That's
on.
That's what I wondered.
Know, so.
I figured as much. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I've
like,
really enjoyed listening to you guys.
Yeah, because there's a thank you very much, because there's a lot that happened to just myself and, you know, friends and even some of my family members. So,
yeah.
It never really ended. This was just a small little portion of, you know.
Yeah, and it just continues. The older you get, the more it continues.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, there was one story that I left out of this book. And the reason being, I have just recently started another book about this, and I am using this one particular story that I felt was just a little bit different than the rest. And this happened to Jenny at another house, at her house. And it's a terrifying story about seeing something happen on a roof. And that just had a whole different twist to me, so I saved it. And so the second book, part two, starts out with another very bizarre, magical event that she actually witnessed. So there's so much, you know, there's so much happened in her childhood that it's a series.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that involves a story that actually involved one of the stories actually involved my mother and my younger baby sister at the time. And it was so serious that my mom took it so serious that we ended up having the police search the woods and everything. And it was a little different, totally different, actually.
I let Jenny get older in the second book. This is a very violent, she witnessed a very violent act. So I'm hoping as the readers mature, they can, you know, it's a little bit more violent than the first book because this was
a
basically murder. She saw a murder, basically. It was basically not real. It was apparitions. So there's a whole other story there as well.
Yeah, and the feel of that story is a lot different too. You know, it's more adult in the sense that it was terrifying in a totally different way because it was actual people and stuff like that.
All right. Look, that's a great preview for that. I appreciate that. Now we're going to go to Devin and then to the amazing one, Amazing Velvet. Devin, do you have a question for these lovely ladies? And they're wonderful.
Hello? Hello? Where did y'all go?
We're here.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
We will go to the amazing one, the amazing Velvet. Do you have a story for these ladies?
Do you want another story?
He was thinking about the biscuit place.
Yeah, Tony Weebles.
Oh, wait a second. Wait a second.
Oh,
wait
man,
a second.
Hold on.
I found Devin in the dark reaches of the internet. Devin, are you with us now?
Yeah, sorry. I didn't realize you all couldn't hear me. I was asking my question and got greeted with a bunch of hellos. So,
re-ask your question, and then we will go to the amazing one.
Yeah, I just wanted to know where we could order your books from or find more information online about your books.
The books can be found at lulu.com. It can also, the books can be found at Amazon, and they can also be purchased through our Facebook pages and contacting us through Facebook.
Great. Hopefully we can get your links up on the ScaryCast page, too.
I was going to ask that right after this show, if one of you would please send me the Amazon link, and I'll get that put up right away.
Okay.
How's that?
Sounds good. Yeah.
Wonderful. That's that's the best question yet. Velvet, the amazing Velvet, what question do you have for these ladies?
I think everybody pretty much covered with, and they said what I was going to ask. I mean, I just think all of this is just amazing stuff, and I love doing all this stuff. You know, listening to stuff, going with my buddies that do investigations. You know, they don't do many right now because of what's going on, but you know, I tag along sometimes. It's all great stuff, man. Sometimes I just can't get enough of it. You know, I wish, you know, we could, you know, do more stuff. And they're like, no, we got to let it lay low for a little while, then we'll go back. I'm like, man, come on. But,
oh, no, that's why we do this, is because we want everybody to, we want everyone to enjoy it. So that's great.
Yeah.
If anyone has any more questions, let me know, because I will say, order the book. The name of the book, what's the name of the kids' book now, Jenny?
The Sacred Chronicles of Pine Mountain.
Okay, and then the adult version, the scarier version, will be coming out sooner than later, correct?
This spring. Maybe early, maybe late winter.
All right, well, I'm going to go ahead and issue the call to say we want you back to talk about that book.
Yeah,
Tony, awesome. Tony, can you make sure that happens?
Oh, absolutely.
We absolutely want that to happen. And since we believe it or not, we have 13 minutes left, I'm going to let Tony ask the last question of these wonderful ladies, and then we'll do our plugs, and we'll go home until next week. So, Tony, what is your last question for these two ladies?
This is for Darla. Can we tell the story without giving too much away of the adult one at the, like a little teaser?
The one about the roof?
Yes.
Yes. This happened in another area of Harlan County, still at the foot of Pine Mountain, still, you know, within that range. But Jenny and her cousins, she had cousins coming to visit, and they were having a tea party under a weeping willow in the yard. And I just thought that imagery was just beautiful. And but it definitely turned dark because the roof of her home changes. And then all the children begin seeing a little girl walking across the roof with a man. And then as the little girl nears the edge of the roof, the man pushes this child basically to her death. He pushes her off the roof. There was another sighting where the same man and child was seen by one of Jenny's siblings, and he had correct me if I'm wrong, Jenny, but he had a knife, and he put his arm around her neck, and he dragged her back into the woods. So this was a very ominous thing, and that's how the next book starts out. And this is a tale of murder along with the paranormal, so it's a bit darker. And the book that we're discussing is Jenny's Magical Summer Adventure. this is a year and a season later, and this is fall. This is Halloween. This is when Pine Mountain turns dark. It turns more into dark magic. So that is what is going to be part two of this series.
And Dave, tell us what you guys found in the barn on the property.
Well, we were a little bit more cautious in those mountains. They didn't have the same feel as where we played before. And we didn't live up there for a very extreme long time. But there were what we call tobacco barns.
Ooh,
in the mountains.
What was that?
And so these barns were kind of logs, but they were open air so the tobacco could actually hang and dry in the mountains. And we had went up there at one point in time, and it was very common for them to have very clean dirt floors, if that sounds ridiculous. But the floors were just kind of like sandy dirt. And in the middle of the floor, we found a pentagram, you know, drawn in the dirt. And it was large. And it creeped us out so bad. And I'm pretty sure that at some point in time, my sister found a little kid's shoe in that barn. And we never went back.
That sounds like a good idea.
Yeah.
All right, Tony.
There was an instance, yeah, like with the situation with the guy with the little girl and the knife that my sister saw at the edge of the mountain. It caused my mother to be so afraid that she called the police, and the police got involved. Because she, you know, my sister was little, but she was so adamant of what she saw that they really thought that there had been a child abducted.
Let's pray that there wasn't. That's all I've got to say. Well, this sounds like a wonderful pair of books to own and to keep in your library. So please send me the link to the Amazon link, and I'll put that up right after the show. And I want to thank everybody, and I want to ask all of our co-hosts. You know, there's a famous. We're not going to do plugs. We're going to do the following. Because it's going to be fun. One of the most famous popular Christmas songs was All I Want for Christmas is My Two Front Teeth. I want to go around the room and find out what each one of you wants for Christmas. It can be silly, it can be fun, it can be whatever. And I'm going to start with the Queen of Scary Cast. And every one of you better have an answer, all you co-hosts, because Robin's pretty good on her feet. Robin, what do you want Santa to bring you for Christmas?
I guess I'd like to see people be a little kinder to each other. There's so much hate going on in our world, and just accept each other for who and what they are. Just simple human compassion. If somebody, you know, needs a kind word, give it to them. If somebody needs a ride somewhere, give it to them. If they need a hug, give it to them. Don't judge people. That's really and truly all I really want. I just would like to see more acceptance of each other and more kindness towards everybody.
See, you don't need your two front teeth. You want kindness. I think that's a wonderful thing to ask for. Okay? we'll see if we can engineer some of that. The next person, the amazing one, Velvet, what do you want for Christmas?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How about this? Can you hear that? Oh, it's Velvet's favorite Christmas song, Last Christmas by George Michael.
Last Christmas, I gave him my heart.
You know, I want for Christmas, to be honest with you.
The gift that keeps on giving, Velvet.
Yeah, you got that right. I use it as a door stopper. That fruitcake, man. I tell you what, no. No, seriously, you know what? The biggest thing I would love for everybody, not just my sake, but for everybody, I've been through enough the last 5 years, and I would love to see COVID just go away and we get back to some sense of normality and we can love each other and hang out with each other again and just be better people. That's the bottom line. It's just be better people. But this needs to go away. Absolutely needs to go away. That's what I want for Christmas.
That's a great wish. Papa Stroh, what do you want for Christmas? What do you want Santa to bring you?
Well, at first when you started asking everybody this question, I thought you had too much eggnog. I was going to ask if I can get some of that myself, but that's special eggnog.
No eggnog tonight.
Okay. Well, I would just like for, you know, happiness is everything in life. And I just like for all of us to find our share of happiness, whatever that may be, to make our lives more happier. And to find something fun, whether it's with your family, friends, or something in your day or night or whatever, find that something, a little special, something that makes you happy and just go with it. Because, you know, we should, the little things in life we should cherish the most, and, you know, and definitely, you know, keep ourselves happy and make others happy too.
That's a good one, Papa Stroh. Thank you. Happiness. Tony Pelosi from the murder capital of the world.
Yes.
What do you want for Christmas? And you can't say that murders in Harlan County. Okay? You can't get that one. But
what I want for Christmas, John, is for Papa Stroh to channel Dusty Rhodes. If that's what he wants for Christmas. That's what I want.
Yeah.
I mean, really,
I'm down.
That's tremendous. I love it.
All right. Now, next week, right after we play Devin's song for the first time, Papa Stroh, will you channel Dusty Rhodes for the one and only Tony?
Yeah, I'll be Dusty Claus next week. That'd be great.
Dusty Claus.
Dusty Claus. Awesome. That's perfect.
Oh, that's even better.
Tony, you'll get Dusty Claus. All right. Next, Devin, what would you like for Santa to bring you next this year or for Christmas?
Well, I did order a copy of your book, Lizard Man Companion, as a present to myself. So looking forward to that. But I also have been primarily eating a vegan diet for the last couple months, so I've asked for
awesome.
A tofu press, so maybe Santa will bring me a tofu press.
You may get a special edition of the Lizard Man book. You just might. I noticed that, and I was going to thank you later tonight when I call all. I got to call all the hosts tonight because you guys are so wonderful. The amazing one.
Yay.
What do you want? What do you want?
I already said that.
From Santa Claus.
I want.
I already
rock.
Gave you mine.
Do what?
I want for Christmas.
He gets two Christmas presents.
Twins and sisters.
I want a Christmas present. Okay. I want to rock.
Oh, that's all right. Yeah, well, I'm sorry. You're right. You're right. I already asked
you.
I'm sorry.
God.
Please forgive me.
Deja vu,
Velvet. I can't remember my name.
I want what he's smoking.
Okay.
Right.
But I'm going to tell you, I'm going to close our show.
Eggnog, baby.
And this is what I want more than anything else. I want 52 more weeks of Scary Cast,
oh, good Lord,
with the world's greatest co-hosts, all of you on here.
Okay, that's good.
And
I
Granny
thought you were
Hulkster.
Say something different.
I want 52 weeks of more of hanging out with you guys because I swear you're
cool.
The best co-hosts in the world. Tony, thanks for bringing Darla and Jenny on. They were wonderful. And we'll see each other next week. Now, Velvet, you're going to love this. Next week, of course, we are going to interview Devin. We're gonna have Papa Stroh channel Dusty Claus, and our guest is, believe it or not, Billy the Kid. He's grown up and he is coming on Scary Cast. Lots of love. I'll talk to everybody after the show. Hey, Karen, thank you so much. You guys
good
are
luck
best
with that. Bye.
Good luck.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Good night.
Bye.
Night.